Welcome to the program for Thursday, February 2nd, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today is Industry Chatter, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. My guest today is Brad Antle. He is from Salient Federal Solutions, joining me in the studio today. Brad, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Francis. Thanks for having me. I just want to add, I'm also the chair of the Northern Virginia Technology Council.
And we will talk about that role that you serve in later on in the hour as
right.
well. I'm really sorry about the weather, that you had to slog through the horrible weather to get here on Groundhog Day today. It's pretty amazing stuff. We start, as we always do, with your description of what your company does for federal clients and some of the clients that you work with in government.
Sure. Well, Salient Federal Solutions, we're an IT services company. We're about a year and a half old, about $150 million in revenue. We focus primarily right now on classified defense and intelligence customers.
Mm-hmm.
We really provide a full suite of capabilities from agile software development to building, engineering, designing, and delivering command and control systems. So really a full spectrum of capabilities. What's unique, I think, is that we're building a company for today's market. So we're not trying to retool something. We see the challenges that are out there in terms of the federal market space, where they're going, and we're kind of building a company that's really going to be tooled for that environment, not yesterday's.
When you talk about agile development, that's almost, it seems to me, at risk of becoming a buzzword, because so many people are talking about it, and yet there are still a lot of different concepts, I guess, maybe not definitions of what it means, but the different people still have different ideas of what
sure.
it really means.
Sure.
When you talk about how it fits in your company's strategy, what does that mean for you?
Well, basically what it means to our customers is an approach to developing software systems that are more of a spiral orientation. You develop a few requirements, you retire some risk by building some capabilities, you deliver them, and then you go to the next iteration of capabilities. So you add functionality, but at every turn, at every cycle, whether it's 3 or 6 months or whatever the customer wants in terms of a cycle, you actually build fieldable functionality that can be used, tested by the users. And so every step of the way, they're getting something more than they had the day before.
Mm-hmm.
They're not waiting 3 to 5 years for what typically is an antiquated system by the time you develop it.
Mm-hmm. When the move toward more agile development started, I have to confess I was skeptical at first because it was so different than what agencies were used to doing. When you frame it the way that you just framed it, though, it sounds like if I were in the end user's position, I would be really happy about this kind of culture change and much more receptive than I might be to culture change in general, because of what you're talking about having something new and better on an ongoing basis instead of waiting 6, 10, 12 years in some cases for some of these projects.
That's true. And what you find is the system, the part of the government agencies responsible for delivering the systems to the users becomes happier as well, because the users get a chance to test a little bit of the capability, and their needs change. As they get, you know, when you use a new product, you get used to something, you say, you know, it would really be nice if it did this. So we have an opportunity as you're developing and fielding a system to be responsive to user requirements as they get used to the functionality
mm-hmm.
that you delivered. So it's a very efficient way of delivering capabilities. And like I said, the government gets something on every cycle.
The dark side, though, of wouldn't it be nice if it could do this is requirements creep, where you wind up with a Frankenstein in certain number of months into the project that's nothing like what you started with. How do you control that, and how do you work with the acquisition team to make sure that something doesn't go too far afield?
Well, I think the scariest proposition with acquisition creep is in the Big Bang approach,
mm-hmm.
because all of a sudden you get so many requirements you can't possibly deliver on time or on budget.
Mm-hmm.
When it's an agile or a spiral development, you're limited by a very short period of time and a very defined amount of money. So you can only fit so much functionality in any one deliverable. So the customer basically has a cup, and you can fit only so much in that cup.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to add something else that a user wants, then generally something has to come out. And now it's a balance of priorities.
Mm-hmm.
So, on very short cycles, the customer's balancing, well, this is more important to my users, therefore take this out, put that in.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of us who go way back to the embedded software arena, where you only had so many bytes of space to put capabilities in,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way an agile bucket is.
Everything old is new again.
Exactly.
It's the same thing, just keeps coming around, it
that's
seems
right.
like. The same concepts, at least. when someone says, can you make it do this, and you say yes if we make it no longer do that, how does that usually go over? Are agencies getting better at being able to live with that?
Well, that's more of an embedded philosophy, and generally the approach is if you want it to do something and that's more important, you have to be willing to give up something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balance of priorities. But let's face it, if your system is supposed to shoot down a missile and you don't want 3 to 5 minutes for it to lock onto a target, you like 3 to 5 seconds.
Right.
So in order to do that, it has to be a high priority capability.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, customers understand that they have to trade off requirements for cost.
Since we're on requirements, let's talk a little bit more about that. Are agencies, the agencies that you're dealing with, getting better at defining what they want up front, or do they not need to do that as much anymore because of the agile philosophy where you can switch things up as you're moving through a cycle?
Well, what really becomes important in an agile environment is to make sure that the architecture is well-defined up front, so at least you have a framework. Otherwise, it's extremely challenging to get a customer to the point where you can deliver something meaningful in the first iteration.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it really depends on the customer. If they're comfortable with Agile, it's new. It's not easy for them to recognize that they're not going to spell out all the requirements up front.
Mm-hmm.
But we're capable of responding either way. We prefer to stay away from large system development that isn't done in an agile or orientation. It's
mm-hmm.
just too risky for us.
Yeah. Yeah, if that's not how you're geared, you talked about the philosophy of your company at the beginning of our conversation, and it sounds like that type of a procurement just wouldn't fit into what you're doing at all.
It doesn't. So
yeah.
we don't chase those.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you can probably think of plenty of occasions where a customer has found that those large programs are overrun in terms of budget and schedule.
There's a whole high-risk list full of them.
That's right.
Yeah. The end users are, from what I hear from vendors, are more involved than they've ever been in the requirements writing and then in the development process. Are you seeing that be the case also?
I think if a system's going to be successful, it needs to be that way. Because the users, after all, are the ones that have to be satisfied with the capabilities. They're the ones that are closest to the mission that needs to be performed.
Mm-hmm.
And if they aren't satisfied, then typically the customer's not going to be happy with our product.
Mm-hmm.
So the more involved the users are, the better the result. The challenge is always to control the users. Users are all different. They all have different requirements, different priorities. And to your point earlier about requirements creep, the customer accepts them all, we probably can't fit them all.
Yeah. Let's pull back on this area a little bit and more broadly. Is it getting harder, do you think, or easier to do business with the agencies?
Tough question. I think there's no universal answer to that. It
mm-hmm.
really depends agency by agency. There's some good news and some bad news. So it all starts in the acquisition front, and I'm sure you've had plenty of folks on here before who have lamented about the challenges in the procurement cycle within the federal government. As I understand it, they're fully staffed in the acquisition arms
mm-hmm.
of the agencies in general. So they've staffed up. That's good news. Problem is that most of them are untrained.
Mm-hmm.
So now the training cycle is underway. They're using a lot of peer reviews in order to try to train their junior folks. They're getting a bunch of junior folks together to review contract mods that a contract specialist might be doing. It slows the process down
mm-hmm.
because they're learning, and they need to do that. So there were some growing pains right now as the government trains up their acquisition workforce. So the good news is that eventually they'll be trained and
mm-hmm.
will be through this this period of time. But for the time being, it's challenging. What I hope doesn't happen is the government starts to have to cut its workforce, which it will inevitably as the budget pressures mount for 2013 and beyond. They don't cut the acquisition workforce that they just brought on.
Mm-hmm. That would kind of defeat the whole purpose of it, it would seem to me. My guest today on Industry Chatter is Brad Antle. He's President, Chief Executive Officer at Salient Federal Solutions. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Remembering what happened at the doctor's office should get easier if you get health care through any federal employee's plan. Participating insurers are putting a blue button on their websites that lets you download your medical history with one click. Depending on your insurer, you may have to enter the data yourself, but more sophisticated versions take it directly from doctor's offices. FEHB officials are asking insurers to include wellness reminders, appointments, medications, and lab results.
When did you last review your life insurance coverage? WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance to federal employees at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also has a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. WEPA gives its policyholders more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn about all of your options. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The lawyer for a prisoner at Guantanamo Bay charged in the attack on the USS Cole has asked a judge to allow him to question the president of Yemen while he's in the U.S. for treatment. Navy Lieutenant Commander Stephen Reyes, who represents Abdel Nashiri, said he thinks President Ali Abdullah Saleh may have information about the attack on the USS Cole that took place in 2000. He believes he can use it in his client's trial. I'm J.J. Green.
How can we determine which armed aerial scout helicopter is best for the U.S. warfighter? By proving it in competition. EADS North America is ready to prove that our AAS-72X is superior to any other armed aerial scout helicopter out there. So let the competition begin. Saying you're the best isn't good enough for our warfighters. You need to prove it. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. We'll talk to the industry advisor who told the DOD to upgrade the CIO position and find out whether anyone in the Pentagon is listening. Plus, the government is neck deep in data. One agency is trying to find ways of making sense of it all. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Brad Antles, President and CEO of Salient Federal Solutions. He's my guest on Industry Chatter today. And you mentioned NVTCA as we got ready to come on the air. Also, Brad, talk about your role there, what you do with them and what they do. That's an organization a lot of people maybe are familiar with but don't know a lot about the nuts and bolts.
Sure. Northern Virginia Technology Council is an organization of about 1,000 companies, mostly technology-oriented, and obviously located in and around the Northern Virginia, Greater Washington area. And it's an organization that brings these companies together both for advocacy as well as for networking, for education. We provide a number of great events and opportunities for companies to get together. We have an entrepreneur center that helps young companies get started. So there's a lot of opportunities that NVTC does, as well as some philanthropic things oriented with clubhouses, computer clubhouses in the Virginia area. So it's an organization all too many people probably don't know enough about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great opportunity for younger companies to get to network with other companies and get support.
What is it about an organization like that, of which you're chairman? Why do you spend your time in that particular area? You could do any one of a number of different things. I see from your bio you're involved in, you have other interests and activities, charities that you work with. Why is this one, in your view, worth your time?
Well, you know, in the government market space, it's rare that as a company you go it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, we're teaming all the time. We're either a subcontractor or we're a prime, and we've got subs working with us. So the ability to bring in the strongest players in our space to go after an opportunity is critically important. There are a lot of great companies in Northern Virginia, and frankly, you're not going to know them all. It's impossible. But organizations like NVTC make it possible to get to know companies,
mm-hmm.
to develop relationships that you'll build on over time,
mm-hmm.
so that it's easier to work together. Through that organization, most of the major corporations that deal with the federal government are members of that company. And the key executives who belong to it, you build a network and a rapport.
Mm-hmm.
It helps.
Yeah. I think people are surprised when they're just trying to learn the federal marketplace, the business landscape, at the level of cooperation that has to go on among companies that in a different setting, maybe in a private sector setting, would just be competing against each other with everything they have. You just never know who the next person is that you're going to be partnered with, I suppose.
Well, we always get the question from investors, even when I was running SI International. Whenever we go on the road, people want to know, who are your competitors?
Mm-hmm.
And it changes every day. And it really varies, because one day we're partners, the next day we're competing against
mm-hmm.
each other.
Yeah. The landscape as you see it right now, especially in defense, given the budget situation that DOD is in and the things that Secretary Panetta has been talking about recently, what do you see on the horizon for the defense industry in general, especially when the Pentagon talks about trying to shape it and make sure that it sounds like, at least to my ear, DOD is concerned about making sure that the landscape looks the way that they need it to serve their needs, and not thinking as much from the company's perspectives. What do you see there?
Well, you know, I don't want to presume that they aren't concerned about the industrial base, if that's what you're referring to. I think they do pay some attention to what the industrial base looks like. Can it support the Department of Defense in the long run? Should we get into a situation we couldn't handle?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they do care. Right now, their strategy, I think, with taking the $250-ish billion out of the next 5 years has really been a focus on asymmetric warfare and the areas that are going to support that. So lighter, smaller forces being deployed to combat very tactical, small engagements.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've rethought their strategy. I don't think they're not thinking anymore about two major global conflicts. And they recognize that fortunately that they're taking an approach right now to cutting the budget from a policy perspective. They've looked at what they need to do, how they need to support the defense of the country, and they've taken their budget cuts. I think the assumption is that if we get to something like sequestration, that's going to significantly impact the DOD in a way that I don't think anybody can project. But right now, I think DOD is taking a reasonably good approach. For those of us that support DOD, the closer you are to the mission, the better off you are. You just need to be on the right mission.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Brad Antle. He's president and CEO of Salient Federal Solutions on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
V. The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented.
Platform as a service is a critical layer in the cloud stack. Infrastructure as a service was only the first step towards the cloud. The platform enables agencies to develop, deploy, and use applications in more agile ways. It allows them to accelerate their time to value for mission applications and continue the savings journeys that they've already begun with their journey to infrastructure as a service in this difficult, constraining budget environment.
To hear the Federal IT Challenge in its entirety and learn more about the journey to cloud computing, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
What is the strategic vision for today's U.S. Air Force? How is the Air Force managing in an era of fiscal constraint? What is the Air Force doing to improve its operations and become more efficient and agile? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Aaron Connaughton, Undersecretary of the U.S. Air Force, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Text for Baby. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, being pregnant or a new mom carries a lot of new responsibility and often a lot of questions. But answers can fit into a woman's cell phone. A program called Text for Baby sends free text messages to phones. The messages have health tips for pregnancy and for caring for a baby up to 1 year old, and they're timed so they match where the woman is in her pregnancy or the baby is by age. Text for Baby is supported by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and other partners. HHS's Dr. Juliet Kendrick says it's easy for moms to get involved.
Users sign up on their cell phones by texting BABY, B-A-B-Y, to the short code 511-411.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today on Industry Chatter, talking to the president and CEO of Salient Federal Solutions, Brad Antle, and we've been talking a lot about budgets. So we mentioned the situation at the Pentagon lately. The Pentagon's budget is not the only one that is going to be pinched over the next foreseeable future, I guess. Is what's going on at the Pentagon now and the fears about sequestration and all of that, do you think that's instructive for what will happen within the next couple of years at all the agencies?
Frankly, I don't think anybody's terribly looking at sequestration as a viable option. So I think, rightly or wrongly, and it's hard to predict. I mean, frankly, I thought something would come out of the
Super committee
to begin with. Not the whole answer, but I thought they might come out with half a loaf.
Anything?
Anything would have been great. So I was a bit surprised. So I'm obviously a terrible prognosticator.
I want to ask you for a Super Bowl prediction.
Yeah,
then.
Don't. I'll give you that later, off the air.
Okay.
But in any case, I think nobody's really looking at sequestration, although they've certainly all the agencies have had to provide their 5 and 10% across-the-board cut looks. I think they're all waiting for the president's budget February 13th. So everybody's sort of covering their ears and they're hunkering down and they're going to wait and see what's in the budget on the 13th. Even DOD needs, even from a DOD perspective, we need to see what's in the president's budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've made some general cuts, but there may be some, further tuning or direction comes out of that that budget.
So essentially, folks are walking around at least for the next 11 days, just kind of holding their breaths. It's not much else to do, is there?
There really is no sense doing a whole lot until you see that. And keep in mind, this is really 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is September. Sequestration kicks in, if it were going to happen, January 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the second government quarter. In any case, I'm sure this budget is not going to have sequestration in it. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. The president said any number of times that he would veto legislation, though, that tried to do away with sequestration. So
that's true. But keep in mind, if he's not the president, then he won't have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? And frankly, his view may change as we get closer to the end of the year. So it depends on how the economy is doing, what the pressures are. It's hard to predict. But I think Congress right now is assuming they'll find a mechanism around it. This is not the first time sequestration's come into play in the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as a leader who's trying to plan around these events, you're trying to lead a company and strategize for that company's future around all of these unknowns and all of these variables. Where do you even start with that process, with that strategy process?
Well, to some extent, when your customer doesn't know if they're going to have budget or not come 2013, it's challenging.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing we can do, and what we typically do, is try to find things we think are important to the government. They're mission-oriented. We don't see how they could possibly not have to support them going forward, and we try to get as close to that as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We know there's going to be another round of BRAC or two coming up, as unpopular as that is. But that's years off. So in the near term for 2013 and 14, we're talking to our customers and trying to figure out what's going to be most important to them, and what are they going to fight hard to keep in the budget and focus in those areas for potential growth.
What are you seeing as far as strategy? What do you think of what you're seeing, some of the new strategies that we're seeing out of DOD, particularly in areas of IT, some of the places where you guys work?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at DOD cuts, IT actually fares pretty well in DOD. So I think there is and I don't want to be too grandiose, but I think there's a realization that IT is actually a mechanism to help save money in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
I equate it to the BRAC scenario, that it's better to spend money now to save a lot more money downstream for forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what BRAC represents. In IT, the ability to take a manually intensive system and automate it may cost you more money today, but it saves you a lot of money in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
So You see the government, the DOD in particular, investing in cloud, in server consolidation, in migrating things in a way that's going to reduce their long-term spend. I think Deputy Secretary Lind had estimated there's some $20 billion of savings, they believe, in server consolidation. Okay. Sounds good. They obviously have to spend money to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see that kind of thing go on. I think we're going to see more investment in applications in the cloud for DOD as well as the rest of the federal government. So that's great for cloud providers. It's great for folks that develop software and applications that can reside in the cloud. Mm-hmm. It's great for folks that invest in cybersecurity software because it's one place to protect. So there's lots of opportunities.
There is a school of thought, though, that we're in such a financial situation now that we don't really have the money or shouldn't spend the money to invest up front. And it's probably a minority view, but if those people that comprise that minority are sitting in the right slots and the right committees, that can make the life of you and folks that do the same things that you do pretty difficult, I imagine.
Well, I guess they would be in the same camp with the folks who say don't raise the debt ceiling, right? And they seem to be in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
So I think cooler heads will prevail and recognize that it isn't so much the here and now as you need to have a longer-term strategy for getting the budget deficit down. And if you can demonstrate that you can spend a dollar today and save $10 over the next 10 years, why wouldn't you do it?
Are agencies on board with that? Because understanding life cycle costs and expenses was not maybe a forte of agencies for a long time.
Yeah, I don't think you can characterize the government either all one way or the other. So I think there are people in government that do get it and understand it, and they're vocal about it, and there's some that don't. But even the ones that don't recognize that technology gets antiquated in a very short period of time. You can't just let it sit there. You have to invest in it. And everybody wants to modernize. There are agencies out there that are terribly behind the technology power curve.
Mm-hmm. What, for the most part, in your view, has driven that? Has it been budget concerns up until now? Has it just been a, this is working fine, we're going to leave it alone mentality, or what?
A little bit of both, I think. I think there's a feeling that if the system works and it's adequately supporting the need, why screw with it? You know, why fix something that's not broken?
Mm-hmm.
And others have a bit are different. They have a different vision for their agency. They're trying to. They recognize that the need is going to grow. Some agencies' needs are drastically changed based on population growth. Some agencies, like FAA, their needs grow based on how many airlines are flying and so forth. So some are easy to predict. Some aren't. It's different visions agencies have for their future, and it's I can't predict it.
Brad Antle's my guest. He's president and CEO of Salient Federal Solutions. With me for Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
Several of the government's most recognizable websites are moving to the cloud. The General Services Administration has signed a deal to transition sites including USA.gov and Data.gov to a privately hosted cloud platform. GSA made the award under its new blanket purchase agreement for cloud infrastructure as a service. It's the second such major deal under that BPA. Homeland Security used the vehicle to move several of its public websites to the cloud last summer.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Defense Department has begun releasing details of its 2013 budget. Look for smaller pay raises, higher fees and health premiums for retirees. Secretary Panetta is also calling for another round of base realignments and closures. More details are expected February 13th when President Obama releases his full 2013 budget request. FederalNewsRadio.com's DOD page has the latest details on the Pentagon's budget. Find it at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search term DOD.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Stopping blood flow from a wound can, of course, mean the difference between life and death. So a new sponge has been engineered to speed clotting. Even a neck wound that obviously can't take a tourniquet could be quickly sealed using the sponge, says Paula Hammond, a chemical engineer at MIT.
We can actually coat every pore of that sponge and therefore really load it with a large amount of thrombin.
The protein thrombin induces rapid blood clotting, and Hammond devised a way to spray it into the sponge in alternating thin layers with tannic acid, a natural substance found in teas that
interacts with the protein in a way that doesn't remove its activity and preserves it.
Hammond says the active ingredients remain stable in the sponge for at least a few months. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Researchers know that managing hypertension or high blood pressure, maintaining a healthy weight, and keeping physically active help heart health.
The message here is that it actually promotes brain health.
Dr. Walter Koroshetz is deputy director at the NIH Institute researching the brain and nervous system. He explains that those same activities to manage hypertension also reduce the risk of strokes and cognitive decline.
The way to manage hypertension is to take blood pressure medicines, to reduce your weight, and to get exercise.
He emphasizes that prevention is key. For more information on reducing the risk of stroke and cognitive decline, visit www.ninds.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Text for Baby. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, being pregnant or a new mom carries a lot of new responsibility and often a lot of questions. But answers can fit into a woman's cell phone. A program called Text for Baby sends free text messages to phones. The messages have health tips for pregnancy and for caring for a baby up to 1 year old, and they're timed so they match where the woman is in her pregnancy or the baby is by age. Text for Baby is supported by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and other partners. HHS's Dr. Juliette Kendrick says it's easy for moms to get involved.
Users sign up on their cell phones by texting BABY, B-A-B-Y, to the short code 511411.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter today with Brad Antle, President, CEO of Salient Federal Solutions. We're talking a little bit, Brad, during the break about some trends in the contracting community, the relationship between government and industry and so on that you're seeing. What are some of those? What are some of the important ones that you've seen over, let's say, the past year to 18 months that you expect to continue over the next year to 18 months?
I would say some of the negative trends I've seen are a little bit of distrust in the by some of the agencies of government contractors.
Mm-hmm.
A sense that this probably started 5-6 years ago, that they were simply out for profit, that mm-hmm. don't necessarily align with the mission, and I don't think that's true. I think most of us out here are trying to support our customers. We recognize the importance of the missions that they provide, both to our citizens and to the country, and we want to support those mm-hmm. in as effective and efficient a manner as possible. we've seen, you know, some of the trends, other negative trends, a lot more protests going on for competitions. And I think that's out of frustration because, frankly, the acquisitions have been taking longer to do. With a more junior acquisition workforce, they're maybe not as perfected as they should be, so they are flawed to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the indication of that is how many protests are actually being upheld. It's staggering. So there are obviously good reasons for protests, and I think businesses have to take that. Unfortunately, the government hasn't reacted negatively to that. They simply take it in stride and mm-hmm. move forward. But it makes things more protracted. So everything seems to be cyclical in the federal government. If you wait long enough, it's gonna repeat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a trend for bundling, and then there's a trend for unbundling.
Mm-hmm.
So some contracts get pulled together to make them larger, and then they're broken apart and made smaller. So I don't think there's any trend that's long lasting. The insourcing was a trend for a while in the federal government, and fortunately, last year that seemed to have slowed down, almost stopped in most places. It's going to pick up again, I'm sure, at some point in time. But I think the government now has a handle on what's inherently governmental. It may not be consistent from agency to agency, but in general, I think we know how each agency sort of treats that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the insourcing trend has stopped. Right now, I think there's still a trend towards multiple award contracts, which, frankly, I think is fine. It eases the ability for the government to get work on contract because after they compete a MAC, then it's out there and it's easier to put stuff on. They have more limited competition because they've already down-selected
mm-hmm.
To their set of winners. So
mm-hmm.
I'm for that trend. I think that's positive. Anything that helps the government get work on contract more efficiently helps everybody, helps them, helps the contracting community.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned distrust. Let me take you back to that for a minute. That was one of the cores of the Mythbusters campaign that Dan Gordon started. Do you get any sense that made any headway or is making any headway? I mean, Dan sat in that chair and said, it shouldn't stop just because I'm not there anymore. Any sense that it's working or that it's even continuing?
I haven't seen evidence that it's continuing, but I think the priorities are now, the focus has shifted. Now everybody's more concerned about the budget priorities and pressures, and,
mm-hmm.
and so I think now it's, we moved on to another problem and priority, and so I think the focus is off of contractors per se,
mm-hmm.
but a recognition that as the government belt tightens, it's going to affect both government employees and contractors proportionally,
mm-hmm.
I think.
The insourcing issue, you talked about inherently governmental, and that some agencies have a handle on what is and what isn't inherently governmental. Does that comport with what industry overall thinks is or isn't, or with what you personally think is or isn't?
No, I mean, unfortunately, the definition of inherently governmental is still a bit loose. But some agencies have taken this inherently governmental language and used it as an opportunity to bring work in that they felt is more mission critical to them. It wasn't necessarily inherently governmental, but they felt like they'd lost the core of what it was they were supporting.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be more in control of their mission, and so they used an inherently governmental language to make it happen. But it's done. So I think whatever's done is done. Those kind of movements are behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I think there's a better application, if you will, of inherently governmental going forward.
Mm-hmm.
They're really looking for people in the acquisition process that are making decisions that, whether it's adjudicating a visa or a passport or it's making a selection for an acquisition, that those things should be done by government employees.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned there briefly the acquisition workforce, and we talked about that earlier in the program, that we're kind of in a new generation of acquisition folks. Obviously, somebody doesn't walk in and know it quickly. A lot of folks have told me it's 5 to 7 years between the time somebody signs on till they're really experienced enough to do something on their own. Do you see that progress happening quickly enough to stay on that time frame, or is it possible that because there are so many people that are coming in at the same time and requiring training, that 5 to 7 year window might have to stretch a little bit.
You know, maybe I'm just overly optimistic, but I think the peer review process that the governments, that a lot of agencies are taking relative to their acquisition workforce is going to speed the process up.
Mm-hmm.
That through peer reviews, you see more examples of different things. So you get exposed to more because you're not just working on your contract. You're actually looking at peers' contracts and task orders and able to see how they're doing their job because you're reviewing their work.
Mm-hmm.
So, the peer review process, may, from a negative perspective, slows my work I want to get on contract down,
mm-hmm.
but it also aids, I think, in the training of the junior workforce.
And is it fair then to assume on your part that 5 to 7 years from now, that shouldn't be a problem anymore because the folks that are learning how to do it now should be up to speed by then?
That's my hope. That's my expectation.
Yeah,
I think... You know, I'd like to think in 3 to 4 years that at the rate they're going, they'll have a much different ability to get work on contract. Of course, the budgets may be such that there isn't as much work to put on contract.
That's, right? That's a fair point. Brad Antles, President and CEO of Salient Federal Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation coming next.
Caps fans, there's more than one big game on Sunday. Don't miss the Sunday matinee against the Boston Bruins on Sunday, February 5th at 12:30 p.m. The Caps beat the Bruins 5-3 last week and look to do it again on Sunday. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped up. Always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
On November 17, 2011, the future of air and missile defense changed forever. MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, demonstrated the first ever over-the-shoulder launch against a simulated target. It was an unprecedented breakthrough and proved that only MEADS, with its 360-degree coverage, can defend our warfighters against air and missile defense threats from any direction. MEADS has the advanced capabilities and reliability that the 40-year-old Patriot system can't provide and will cost half as much to man and maintain versus upgrading Patriot. MEADS 360-degree coverage defends more area with fewer assets and has the lethality to defeat advanced threats. Defending more, costing less. MEADS. For more information, go to MEADS-AMD.com. That's MEADS-AMD.com.
Paid for by Lockheed Martin.
Did you know that organ and tissue transplants save thousands of lives each year? This 2012, make the decision to save lives by becoming an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Registering is easy. Do it whenever obtaining or renewing your driver's license. Or register online at beadonor.org. That's beadonor.org. This is Hillary Howard. I registered to be a donor and have the heart on my driver's license to prove it. Join me and register today.
Register today for Affirm's February 14th luncheon for an in-depth look at how government policy is born at the General Services Administration. Federal News Radio's Francis Rose will discuss government's leading policy think tank, GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy, with the senior management team headed by Associate Administrator Kathleen Turco. This luncheon briefing will take place in Washington at the Sofitel Hotel. Register today for Affirm's Valentine's Day program at Affirm.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry Chatter today with Brad Antle, President, Chief Executive Officer of Salient Federal Solutions. We just have a couple of minutes left, Brad. I appreciate you being on with me today. What if you and I get together and have this conversation, say, a year or 2 years from now, what do you think will be different about the way your company does business, the kind of business you're doing, who you're doing it with, what the government landscape looks like, and what do you think will be similar to what we're looking at today?
In 2 minutes?
Yeah. So, yeah, and just so, we have 30 seconds left. Yeah.
Okay, so let me start. I'll take a little bit of that question. So I think in a couple of years, a couple of things about our company. We'll be more diversified. I mean, right now we're classified defense and intelligence, and we're certainly going to be more diversified because there are other needs in the federal government besides DOD and the intel community that will get funded and need support. Mm-hmm. Things like Department of State has a huge challenge in terms of soft power. Filling the void when the DOD, when military leaves a place like Afghanistan. So there are other agencies, the federal government, FBI, and others that have missions that will need to be supported. So we'll be more diversified. We'll certainly be a lot larger because I expect to grow through the downturn in the federal budgets.
Mm-hmm.
I have aspirations to see that we'll have acquisitions start to become more efficient and mm-hmm. effective. The government will be better at getting money to work. But I expect the budget to be smaller, so it'll be tighter. I think issues like cybersecurity are going to be more in the forefront. We're going to see greater emphasis placed on companies even like ours. We have a cyber product. I think we'll see more heavy reliance on solutions like that can help protect our information. So I think it's unfortunately it's not going to be drastically different than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been an increasing trend in acquisitions. So a lot of smaller companies are taking this kind of uncertainty that exists and using it as an opportunity to exit. Other companies are trying to reposition. We're an acquisitive company. We're going to continue to acquire. So I think you're going to see a little bit different landscape in the acquisition end of it.